Another day, another podcast. Thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net, the world's longest running football fans podcast. So what's been going on in Scottish football since the last podcast, which was only about sort of 2.5 weeks ago? Well, we've sold Kieran Tierney. We've started the domestic campaign fantastically with 12 league goals. We've then been knocked out of the Champions League again by a team that we should be beating in Cluj with some strange managerial picks on the day of the game. We then followed that up with the Dunfermline scraping past Dunfermline in the League Cup. And the three talking points for me out of the Dunfermline game were Celtic were pish, John Beaton didn't give a penalty when there was a clear ball to hand following the footsteps of other Scottish referees, and the Dunfermline fan songbook was vile. However, for the Scottish press, well, three or four journalists, the real talking point was the fact that on a subscription TV channel paid for and watched only by Celtic fans, Tom Boyd said that he wasn't happy about the ref's performance. Anyway, enough of me. I'm joined by Anthony Murray, fresh from America. This is me and Anthony Murray on the Celtic Underground Podcast. So, fresh from your transatlantic tours back in Europe, just ready for taking all the British immigrants after Brexit, we have Anthony Murray. How are you doing?
Great, yeah, fully refreshed after my American adventure. Big shout out to the DC Celtic Supporters Club, with whom I enjoyed the Sarajevo game. It was good fun, yeah.
You enjoy that game?
Yeah, it was the first one, the one where Mikey Johnson scored the goal. Yeah. And all three of the DC Celtic Supporters Club, and I include myself in that number, had a great time. There was actually as many Bosnians there than there was Celtic fans. So, for anyone who believes in the myth of the gigantic Celtic diaspora, yeah, let's puncture that.
It sounds like my experience of watching Celtic beat Aberdeen in Andorra many years ago.
Right. You wouldn't expect a lot in Andorra.
No, you wouldn't.
You know, in Washington, D.C., you think, oh, right, they're all going to be out, you know?
I cheered when Celtic scored. Somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, I think you better go through there. And I went in, opened these huge big double doors, and there's a huge room with four guys with Celtic tops sitting in there. So.
Yeah. All Glaswegians in their 50s and 60s is my experience.
Yes. Since the last podcast, you've been away, we've had holidays. So last podcast, a relative of yours was on, and we all agreed that we expected Kieran Tierney to leave. So that's the first sort of major event in the timeline of things we got to discuss. So the departure of Kieran Tierney, angry, sad, accepting, what was your feelings?
It's melancholic, isn't it? It's that thing where all I dream about is a Celtic team full of home-produced Scots that, you know, winners the European Cup. And, you know, we finally, in my lifetime, produce one that, you know, could be in that conversation. You know, might go on to achieve that. Not with Arsenal, granted, but maybe when he moves on to someone better than that. A genuinely great player. A great player that was great the minute he arrived, you know. The minute he walked in a park, he was just clearly brilliant and there to stay. And he did, and he stayed, and he won. He won lots and he enjoyed it and we loved him and he scored some great goals. That goal against Kilmarnock when he was the captain and he smashed it in from 50 yards. You know, moments like that will never leave us, but it's sad to see him go.
Were you surprised at how many people were angry about his departure?
I mean, I think I marry that into the sort of modern phenomenon of, you know, overreaction on Twitter.
You know, people overreact on Twitter?
But within the Celtic community, you know, it's you can't stop the inevitable. You know, it was always going to happen. He was too good. It's a strange thing. I liken it to basically in my household growing up in the 80s, my old man was basically permanently melancholic, particularly whenever the idea of Charlie Nicholas came up. Right? And it was this thing where we lived quite near the border with England, and we were always, it was always kind of saying to my big brother, you know, why is Dad always sad? And my brother's version of it was, well, Charlie Nicholas went to England. And we'd look over the Solway Firth and see England. And I remember looking over and seeing England and thinking, it's not that far away. You know, why? It's not like we can reach out and touch it. You know, why is Dad so sad? Because Charlie Nicholas went off to England.
Yeah, but you're looking at Whitehaven and Cleetamore and Workington.
I didn't know that. I was 4 years old.
You're not looking at the bright lights of London.
Yeah, that's the point. The point is, from a child view, I didn't understand why England was this, you know, point of sadness for my old man. And then it's almost like history repeating itself. You know, I'm destined, you know, to stare at Arsenal with this sadness in my heart that, you know, why did he have to go? You know, and I mean, there's that spiteful little shitty part of me that's hoping his underachievement is, you know, as lousy as Charlie Nicholas's. But ultimately, I wish all the best for Kieran Tierney. I hope he goes, and I hope he ends up in a Barcelona shirt. You know, I really hope he skips up the next level. You know, it hurts us to admit that Arsenal are, you know, have more power than us, but, you know, there's always a bigger fish, and hopefully he does well enough to get scooped up by someone better than Arsenal.
There was also lots of people were agitated about his price tag.
There's nothing we can do about that. That's just shitty capitalism. You know, Arsenal are buying some shitty French player or some player from France, you know, for $62 million. And he's not going to be better than Kieran Tierney. He's not going to have as good a career as Kieran Tierney. But there's nothing we can do about that. So I don't think there's any point complaining about it.
And so we've replaced Kieran Tierney with Bolingoli. What's been your views on him?
I don't think he deserves the abuse he's getting. I think he deserves the time in the team to really, you know, pass or fail. I certainly wouldn't write him off this early. There was a goal, was it the goal at Motherwell maybe, or the goal against Cluj away? I can't remember, one of them. It was one of these ones where basically three people were collectively at fault, you know. Uh-huh. But it was him that got the blame, you know, from the most of the voices that were complaining. So it's at that point you've just got a whipping boy that maybe, you know, I've complained about players in the past that, you know, were serial offenders, but he's not been there long enough to be a serial offender, I would argue. So I would give the boy a chance. At the end of the day, you know, there's a sort of raw athlete there with a decent left foot. I don't want to jump forward to the Cluj game, but, you know, there's four players there that I would have faith in, but ultimately they can't defend. So I'm not going to blame the one left back from the back four that, you know, is leaking goals. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and your point about picking on players, I mean, I remember, you know, last season we lost a goal, was it last season? Or season before? No, it must have been the season before, because last season we only had 800 fans. The season before last, one of the goals we lost to Ibrox. I was in the Broomloan stand, ball coming, I can't remember which goal it was, which game it was, but I remember as their move was building, thinking there was absolutely no danger because of where Kieran Tierney was.
Yeah.
And the ball came across, and Kieran Tierney sort of, like a cartoon character who runs in the opposite direction of where he's supposed to go, completely bypasses it, and they score. And the opposite of what you say about somebody becomes a whipping boy, the other thing that then happens is,
at that goal, there was about 3-4 Celtic players at fault. But the one player that nobody was blaming was Kieran Tierney, because he was the opposite. He was the golden boy.
Yeah.
And you know, fans always do that. When a goal is lost, they're looking for a scapegoat. And then when one of the people involved in that fault is the guy who's getting criticism, then great, let's all just pile into him. When, as you point out, most goals that are lost, it's very rare there's only one guy makes a mistake for a goal.
Yeah.
So, in terms of Kieran Tierney, I think I agree with you. This is sort of a melancholy thing. I think part of my melancholy was getting really frustrated at guys in their 50s who've never been an elite athlete in their life telling somebody more than half their age who's been an elite athlete since 7 that if they were in their shoes, there's no way they'd believe in Celtic. And you think, I have no idea how I would think if I was Kieran Tierney. He's grown up in a completely different world than the one I've grown up in. A much more material... You know, I'm a bit younger than you. I grew up in the 70s when a headmaster was paying 85 pence in the pound tax. You know, in terms of people's expectations of money and income were very different when I was young to the world that Kieran Tierney's grown up in. He's been an elite athlete since he was 7 years of age. The world he's been in is just so different to mine. I have no idea what I would do if I was in his shoes. I can't say. All I can do is look at it and think, I can appreciate why I would be different. I can appreciate why I would think, right, I've been a Celtic first team player now for 4 or 5 years, it's time for me to move on. I'm not saying I would or I wouldn't, and I'm not saying he should or he shouldn't. I just find it odd these people get very angry because they can't work it out. And then start giving him abuse.
Yeah, the abuse is odd. I think I have had those thoughts in my life. I genuinely thought I was going to make it until I was about 32, despite having rarely dipped above university football. You know, I was shite, let's be honest. Right? But in my head, you know, it was my destiny to play for the Celtic. And I always kind of framed it in my head that, you know, I would never have left the Celtic unless it was like Barca or Juve and the club wanted me to go. You know, that's the way I had it in my head. That's the narrative. Uh-huh. I genuinely, I love the Celtic. You love the Celtic. Kieran Tierney loves the Celtic. You know, that's obvious. But the game has shifted in the last 15 years where, oh, wait, I can get 100 grand. Do you know what I mean? If you're weighing up 25 grand, 30 grand, to 100 grand or 75 grand, whatever he's on now, it's absurd. It's disgusting. It's immoral. But that's the
but
way it is.
But it is what it is.
So you can't. I'll never judge Kieran Tierney, and I just wish. You know, deep down, I wish him all the best. You know, I hope he enjoys it. I hope he's a great Scotland player, and I hope, you know, at 30 or 32, he comes back and wins. What would it be, 25 in a row or whatever?
Something like that.
I don't know.
But it's also this. It was almost like the way some people are talking about it. He had to be a prisoner. You know, someone like. It's okay for Andy Robertson to be a Celtic fan and not play for Celtic because the opportunity, the circumstance were different. It's okay for, you know, lots of people to be Celtic fans and not play for Celtic. But the way some people were talking about it, it was almost like now he's at Celtic, you know, he should not be allowed to leave. He should be a prisoner. I just thought, let him go and play at the most elite level he can. If he's got the ability to play at the very highest level, let him go and do it. Unfortunately, the circumstance of the capitalist world football that you talk about, we can't get to that level.
Yeah. I do understand the arguments that with the age and with the 9-10 in a row being so close, do you know what I mean? If, you know, I mean, I understand the whole he's an immortal already, he's a treble winner. But he really, having left now, I do think it kind of undermines his status as a legend. He's not a legend. He's a great Celtic player who will go on to be a great footballer, but he's not a legend. you know, Larson sacrificed a career in the English Premier League, you know, a career scoring dozens of goals in the Champions League to play for Celtic. That's what a legend is.
Do you know, people use Larson a lot, and I wondered if the difference with Larson was, Larson was not from Scotland, he'd gone away, he'd gone to Feyenoord, and it hadn't gone well.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so he was at a big club, and it hadn't gone well, and came to Celtic, and it did go well. I wonder if the difference in Larson's mentality, also, Larson was turning down maybe an extra 10, 15 grand a week.
Yeah.
Not an extra, you know, four times his salary a week.
But well, not even that. We were matching the salary. You know, his salary was as high as anyone's in the UK at the time.
Yeah, so I do wonder whether the difference there is he's been away, experienced not great times and appreciated what he's had, whereas Kieran's still, hopefully for him, on that upward ladder. So, so we sold Kieran Tierney, and we already had Ballingolli in before we signed Kieran Tierney. Did you think the club saw Ballingolli as his replacement, or do you think we should still be signing another left back?
I think having invested in a guy who's, you know, athletic and young enough to improve if given guidance by a good manager or a good coach or good coaches, then we don't need to be going out and spending big money on a better left back. If we manage to get a better left back, you know, obviously no complaints. We're linked with this Norwegian boy who looked handy for Rosenborg when we played against him. But if, you know, if I'd prioritise other, I don't know. It's hard to think because I don't. You know, there's moments last week where, you know, if not for the Cluj game, I'm pretty positive and confident about the squad that we have right now. I like a lean squad with hungry players getting minutes. I like the opportunity for young players to get a run out. But, you know, that was a big... It's almost... I wouldn't even blame the squad for that disaster last week. Because, like, you know, everyone said, you know, 10 million left on the bench. You know, we have to assume that Julian and Boley might be better than they have been thus far.
Well, let's talk about the positives first before we get on to the downer of Cluj. So the positives are the start to the season, taking 7 goals off St Johnstone, 5 goals off Motherwell. So 12 goals in 2 league games is a brilliant start to the season. What were your thoughts in the first 2 domestic games? Obviously, you're watching them from afar. So what was your thoughts?
Really pleased that the starting four up front, what was it, Edward, Johnston, Forrest, Christie?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, that is, I have 100% faith in that front four to deliver 9 in a row. If they stay fit and they play, nothing will stop us this year, certainly domestically. And actually, even in Europe, potentially, because they all played brilliant. In recent weeks, was ecstatic to see Johnson. Was it Johnson's goal against St Johnstone where he turned the boy inside out and then slotted it? And then Christie just went into overdrive. You know, 3 shots from outside the box. You know, each one better than the last. You know, particularly the last one, which was just smashed in off the bar. You know, that was just brilliant. And then the slight twist, I'd say, is in Cham's revival. I wouldn't have foreseen that. But then was pleased to see him, you know, tear through and score a lovely goal. And then play an absolute blinder against Motherwell. In the forward parts of the field, I'm quite happy with what we've got. I also love Griffiths. And I'm glad that Griffiths has started the season well.
So the domestic front, quite happy with the way we're going forward. And then came the Cluj tie. So we drew 1 each away from home, right?
Right.
And I actually sensed coming into the tie at Celtic Park, coming into the ground before the game, I sensed that the general atmosphere was, well, we drew one each away from home, so we'll probably win 2-3-0 at home, maybe 3-1. There was not a flatness in terms of a negativity, a flatness in terms of this is an expectation that we should win this tie.
Yeah, so we're blasé, basically.
Yeah, a blasé element to the support was pretty much what I sensed going into that game. So what was your thoughts? The first real talking point, I assumed that we were just playing three at the back, because the first real talking point was that Bolly was on the bench and Callum McGregor was picked as left back. So what were your thoughts on that?
I guess my first hope was that it was a three at the back. You know, because Rodgers did that once or twice, where we went three at the back, and, you know, it was like a sort of 3-4-3 or a 3-3. I don't know, God knows what it was, but you know, you can get away with three at the back, but even then it was still a mystery as to who the left fullback or the left wing back would be, because mm-hmm. there wasn't one, you know, and ultimately, you know, that wasn't what it was. It was McGregor at left back. What you were saying a minute ago about our, you know, I was quite confident we'd do well, but bizarrely, I did fire off a message to my pals, like, you know, 5 minutes before kickoff, saying, if we've underestimated Cluj here, this could be Partizan Belgrade / Tyrol Innsbruck. And, you know, anyone listening would know that one of them went our way, uh-huh. One of them absolutely did not. But it was weird to have had that thought and then to watch the game, which was extremely exhilarating. You know, it was an exciting game. It was a fun game to watch. But ultimately, an absolute disaster. I guess I was impressed by how Cluj started. You know, they really did press on us in a way that we should have expected, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that thing where it's like, all right, okay, McGregor, you know, he's not the world's worst left back, but it's that wasteful opportunity to have him in his primary position. The thing I loved about Cluj was their penchant for hoofing balls into the box without even looking at the box. Did you notice that? The guys that hit their crosses weren't looking up.
Right.
It was proper, I don't know, people might think it's sort of caveman football, but it was proper, like, get the ball out your foot and hoof it into the space and just bank on the fact that maybe someone's seen it coming, which, you know, an organised team would have planned for that. You get the ball, get in the box, boom, goal.
I'm just going to put the ball in an area in the box where issues can be created from the ball being there. So if I put it in often enough, something will happen.
Yeah, and I'd say that was probably their tactic without even knowing that you had a makeshift centre-half / left back. Do you know what I mean? That's just your plan, mm-hmm. You know? Get the ball in early and have the guys in the middle know to attack it, you know, regardless of who the defence are. And that worked an absolute treat for them. You know, there was the chance before the goal and there was the goal. And it worked perfectly, you know. Maybe we should look into that, you know, just balls into, maybe when we get, if we ever get the Ivorian boy in the team, who can jump a bit, maybe balls into the box will be a good plan. But that's what I had from Cluj, that they turned up to, you know, challenge us. They didn't lie down to get beat. They came at us, and, you know, they made a game of it. I don't think they were very good.
No,
you know what I mean?
First half in particular, I felt we'd taken them too easily.
We underestimated them.
Yeah, they pressed us high, and that seemed to have taken us aback. But I mean, if you think about it, they're 1-1 at home. So if they push and they need to score a goal or they're out. So if by pushing up they leave space at the back and we score, the proposition for them is not changed. They still need to score a goal. Granted, that then takes it to extra time, but the principle is, no matter what happened, they needed to score a goal. So we should have been expecting them to be more on the front foot than it looked like we were in the first half.
The thing that they're pressing really exposed for me, and this, you know, again, I sent a message 10 minutes in. It was like the realization that Scott Brown isn't that composed on the ball. You know, there's been a lot of better midfielders that have played for Celtic and for every other club, that if you're wanting a guy to come and take the ball and, you know, spray it around and look smart and look tidy, you know, you don't all have to be Pirlo to, you know, do that job. As it is, we have one. His name's Callum McGregor.
Yeah.
He was playing at left back. And the fact that he wasn't there a couple of times early on, we kind of got a little fright because, you know, they got closer than you would like to Brown. And I sent a message to Pal saying, I wish it was in Cham that was taking those deep balls, because against Motherwell, and Cham looked untouchable, and Cham had some nice touches. But it was that reality check that, you know, for all, I don't know, 500 of Scott Brown's European games, how many of them has he legitimately ruled the roost? You know, how many of them has he been a top European class player? The answer to that is very few. He's been a great player in Scotland. He's fought the good fight occasionally in Europe. Is he a top European player? No, he is not, and he never has been, really.
The thing you say there about Scott Brown and impressing Scott Brown, and you know, after 10 minutes saying him, after 15 minutes I sent someone a message saying, I know this may seem ridiculously early, but we need to make a substitution and move Callum McGregor away from left back. After 15 minutes you could see that was a major problem for us.
Yeah.
And yeah, he actually played the full 90 minutes at left back, or 96 minutes, whatever it was that we ended up playing. In the game, he played the whole tie at left back. So that then, into the second half, we came out of the second half on fire. We were playing high, aggressive, pressing football. Get the early goal, we're on the front foot. 2-1 up, looking good. And then Scott Brown does something completely incomprehensible.
It's just beyond all logic. And fair play, you know, he came out and apologised for it. I mean, what more can you do, you know? It was really odd, and really it did knock the stuffing out of us, although we came back from it.
Yeah, but I felt at that point, although it came from a corner kick to them, so they were obviously in our box, at that point I really felt that the most likely team to score the next goal was us.
Yeah.
And if we'd have made it 3-1,
yeah, maybe been game over.
I just didn't. They were gradually going out of it, we were continuing to be on the front foot. What do you think made Scott Brown do it?
I've no idea. I mean, it's that thing, isn't it? It's that, you know, why do, you know, a lot of players have done stupid stuff. I don't know. There's no words. It was an accident. It was daft. It was naive, clumsy, you know, but ultimately it was shit, wasn't it? You know, it didn't help us out.
No, I mean, I had this conversation with someone who, you know, they were saying, oh, you can't blame Lennon too much because every one of the goals was individual errors. And my counter to that was, yeah, but notice how few individual errors occur in games that are by teams that are managed by elite managers.
Yeah.
Individual errors, for me, arise because, for a number of reasons, the team's not fit enough. So people make mental mistakes because they're not quite fit. The team's got the wrong setup, so the system of the team's not right. So people are making mistakes because they're not feeling they're in the, you know, because the way the team, or people are getting played out of position, And so the people make mistakes because they're not in the right point in the park. And then somebody else then came by and said, and the other point, and this was their thoughts on the Brown thing, that the other reason people make mistakes is because of the mental stress. And he felt that somebody at Brown's experienced that mistake, making that mistake, came from the amount of stress the Celtic players are under for these European games.
I understand that, but I mean, it's an odd. We are a unique club that have this huge, you know, expectation at this strange time of year when most people are still on the beach. Maybe we need a reality check. I think a lot of Celtic fans are aware that, you know, we're not a Champions League club in terms of, you know, the players on the pitch. You know, do we want to go to Paris and let in seven, you know, a bunch of times to make, what, 25 million quid or whatever it is in the Champions League, or go to the Europa League and compete and actually have some, you know, good wins and stuff? So that whole idea of expectation, I understand that. But ultimately, going back to what you were saying about individual errors, like you were saying, was it the other day, Liverpool's goalkeeper, you know, did the mother of all individual errors, but they still won 2-1.
Yeah.
Because they're a good team that are set up properly by a good coach.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can get away with individual errors if you win a game comfortably. It's, you know, those things don't contradict each other. So I don't think that's a strong enough argument to, you know, back Lennon on the grounds that, you know, multiple individual errors occurred.
I mean, it's their third goal, I watched it back, and I've not watched the whole move, but Guy has the ball at the halfway line near the dugouts and makes a pass to the guy who takes the shot that Bain then parries out. The guy who takes that shot is next to Brown.
Yes.
He runs into the space and Brown jogs after him. But because he's running, Brown's jogged, the guy picks up the ball 2 yards clear at Brown. When he takes the shot, Simonovic, instead of being in line with Christopher Ayer, Simonovic is 3-4 yards deeper than Christopher Ayer, meaning the guy who then scores the goal is onside. If Simonovic is standing in line with Christopher Ayer, the guy who scores the goal is offside. And then the final sort of mistake in that setup is right back has always been taking lessons in the right back positioning of Mikkel Lustig. Because it's the same principle. Lustig lost European goals because he would lose the guy over his shoulder and not notice a guy coming behind him. And that's exactly what happened. Guy comes in, he's not paying attention, over his shoulder, scores. Now I know, why do you think Lennon's not playing Sinclair? Because when it went to 2-2, I mean, granted he was going to make the substitution at 2-1, they then score the penalty to make it 2-2, but he still goes through with this substitution. Lewis Morgan comes on and Scott Sinclair's not even on the bench.
I've no major beef with this. I don't rate Scott Sinclair. I don't have any faith in Scott Sinclair. I know what he scored. He has scored goals in these games before. But ultimately, I wouldn't pay to watch Scott Sinclair. So, one of my criticisms of Celtic is that, you know, there's no long-term planning. You know, why are we not short-term, long-term prepping for a post-Scott Brown existence, which is going to be accelerated now because we're all realising, all right, this is what happens when we don't plan. You know, we don't allow for stagnation and age and these things. So, to go back to what I was saying, I'm fully on board the Mikey Johnson, James Forrest, Christie, Morgan rotation ahead of Scott Sinclair. I'd punt Scott Sinclair. Huge wage guy that I wouldn't pay to see. Next, move him on. I don't need to see him come on in that game. In the same way, you know, everyone might get stroppy about Morgan coming on in that game and not really doing much. Sean Maloney came on against Porto in Seville, and a couple of years later was, you know, Scottish Player of the Year. So I'm gonna fight Morgan's corner on this one. Mm. If Morgan's there, then he's done enough in training to suggest he should be there. And I've seen enough of Morgan, maybe for St Mirren, that says to me that there's a footballer there that we've invested in and that we need to have a bit of faith in. And, you know, folks shouting at him and writing him off and blaming him for stuff that isn't his mistake. You know, it wasn't his mistake that we let in four goals the other day.
No. I mean, I don't blame. I've got a different opinion of Morgan. I look at Celtic, I look at team players when they're playing on the pitch, and I look and I think, right, okay, is there something, has he got something about him that you know, and so I, like you, I'm a bit unhappy with the criticism of Bolingoli because he can cross a ball and he's got a bit of athleticism. There's more to him than people are saying there is to him. I'm not saying he's definitely going to make it, but I think there's a better player than people are saying there is.
Yeah.
I look at some players that aren't quite good enough, and I think if you went to Hibs, this is all Hibs. I don't know why Hibs is always my benchmark, but I always think if you, a bit like Dylan McGeer, right? I look at someone like Dylan McGeer and I think, you're not quite good enough for us. You could be a squad player for us. Gary Mackay-Steven was one of those players that I looked at and I thought, but if you went to Hibs, you would be a guaranteed starter on the Hibs team. And after 3-4 seasons, people would be wanting you getting a game for Scotland. Because you're a very good Hibs player, but when you come to a much better team like Celtic, you're not quite good enough. And I look at, there's two players in the Celtic team just now. The goalkeeper, Bain.
Yeah.
He's a good Hibs goalkeeper. He's a Celtic number two, top whack.
Yeah.
He's good enough to come in for, I've thought this all along. Part of it is because he's not tall enough for me.
Right.
But I look at him and I say, you're good enough and you'll make some good saves and you're better with your feet than Craig Gordon. But it's a bit like, remember when we lost all the goals to at Media Bratislava?
Yep.
And Marshall was in goals.
Yeah.
He wasn't at fault for any of those goals. But 3 months later, I remember thinking, Marshall wasn't at fault for any of those goals, but if Arthur Boric had been in goals, we wouldn't have conceded as many goals.
Yeah.
You know, I can't identify the goal that he would have stopped, and I think that with Bain, you couldn't say he was particularly at fault for those goals, but he's a very good Hibs player. He's a Hibs first choice, Celtic second choice. And Lewis Morgan, I'm not even sure he's a Hibs first choice player. I think St Mirren's his level, personally.
I'd need to give him time and minutes before. Yeah, I'd never write anyone off. You know, I'm still pining over, you know, Raymond McStay's unknown Celtic career. You know, I live in a world of hypotheticals, you know, and alternative realities. At the end of the day, he's there just now, so I wish him all the best. But you might be right. You know, I don't know.
My irritation for the Cluj game is I had a conversation with someone just before it, you know, just before the first leg, who'd said that they thought the Celtic squad was good enough. And I laughed when they'd said it was good enough. Because I said, we need two different fullbacks. And if we play anybody half decent, they'll run right through that midfield. And my irritation is, in the second leg, Cluj ran right through our midfield. And one of the goals, our fullback was one of the players at fault, and the manager didn't even rate our left back to play him. So my frustration is, it was obvious to me what the faults were in our squad. And even now, going into a game tomorrow night, which we'll get onto in a minute. We've not signed us. Well, we've signed a free transfer from Southampton, but he's a project player. He's not a first team player. We've not signed a single soul since getting knocked out by Cluj.
I think the idea of the running through the midfield, I mean, part of me, you know, is like attacking football, so I would have McGregor at the base of the midfield. But if you think back, you know, in my lifetime, where and when have we shone in Europe? And it's when, ironically, Lennon and Lambert were in the team at the base of the midfield. And as much as I doubt Lennon as a manager and as a person, perhaps, I always, you know, adored him as a central midfielder, you know, particularly a defensive central mm-hmm. midfielder. There was nobody harder than him. There was nobody read the game better than him. And ultimately, he, you know, it was under his reign within the team that we got to a European final. And then you look at, you know, us beating, you know, Barcelona or whatever, and it's, you know, when Wanyama's in the team, you know, it just shows the importance of a top class deep line midfielder whose job really is to, you know, throw their hips around and let the opposing midfielders know who's there. You know, read the game well, win the ball, make it, you know, hit the simple passes, you know, do that stuff importantly. And as much as Brown might move the ball quickly at times, he's not a legitimate hard man. You know, he's not a genuinely strong player. You're relative to Lennon and Wanyama before him. Maybe it's not the Celtic way in my lifetime to have that, but that's what's pushed us above that level when we've had it.
It's interesting you say about the one of the things Mark Cooper has said, talked about on this podcast, was that when you're playing at that level, you need a midfielder who's really good at shutting down space and stopping the opposition play. And I always remember a guy who sadly passed away. He was used to be chairman of Dumbarton that I worked with, a guy called Gilbert Laurie. And I remember him going on about in Celtic fans loving Neil Lennon and Chris Sutton, and he just didn't see what it was because he'd only ever watched Celtic games on the telly.
Yeah.
And then he went to, I can't remember, it was one of the Celtic European games, I can't remember which one it was, and he said, I have to apologise to you because I now understand why the Celtic fans are going on about Neil Lennon and Chris Sutton, because the work that they do off the ball is the reason why Celtic won last night.
Yeah.
It was the work Lennon did in being able to read the play and be shutting down space so that the options of the opposition in midfield were limited, because when they came, you know, a lot of people, you know, we all get very excited at Celtic Park when somebody goes flying into a slide tackle and puts somebody up in the air, when actually the real skill set in European football is to be in the place where they want to make the pass to, and so the pass isn't on because you've just shut down the space. And how Chris Sutton was brilliant for creating the space for Henrik Larsson to play into was his point. And he said, so on the telly, when the camera's following the ball, you don't see what Sutton and Lennon are doing, shut it down. And the thing for me about midfield, I don't think Lennon knows how to play. McGregor's not been the same since Lennon came in, and I'm not sure that Lennon knows where to play McGregor and how to play McGregor. And I think the other thing that's so frustrating about the Cluj game, the people who were extolling the virtues of Neil Lennon replacing Brendan Rodgers as manager, getting back to your losing 7 goals in Paris comment, their point was Lennon will be much more pragmatic than Brendan Rodgers ever was in European football. Brendan Rodgers wanted to go toe-to-toe with Barcelona and PSG when we weren't capable of it and we just got a doing. Lennon will be far more pragmatic. And the thing that frustrated me about his team selection and the way the team was set up against Cluj was we were through in that tie if it finished 0-0. So the most important thing for us was to set up in a much more the pragmatic Neil Lennon that we were sold in the summer by the people who said these are the benefits of getting Neil Lennon. One of the things was he'll have a much more pragmatic setup in European football. And he didn't. So what's your assessment of the squad for European football based on the Cluj game?
European football in general?
Or just playing Europa League?
Europa League, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't believe Cluj are better than us. And I don't believe out with the super elite group of at least first wave of Champions League, you know, there's not going to be many teams in the Europa League with a better front four than us. So it's a bit of a lottery. Do you know what I mean? Some teams will be more pragmatic. Some teams will have a decent centre half. Some teams will have a coach that is out to defend rather than attack. So it's an absolute lottery as to how the results will go. Ultimately, I mean, I'm a sort of Tommy Burns fundamentalist, you know, even a Brendan Rodgers fundamentalist, in terms of I'd rather we go out and play and entertain ourselves and hope that we win those 4-3s rather than lose those 4-3s, if that makes any sense. I once, a little window into my existence, I remember when I used to write letters when I was drunk, right? You know, like it's years ago, you know, like 21, 22. And, you know, when you'd wake up and read the letter back.
Yeah.
It was a letter to yourself, right? And one time, I must have been in a pub and there was a Man City game on when Kevin Keegan was the boss at Man City. And I'd written a letter to myself saying, you should write Kevin Keegan a letter and just tell him how thankful you are for, you know, his football. And this is when, like, Sean Wright Phillips and Kiki Musampa were bombing down the wings. My point being, I guess I just love attacking football. And ultimately, if that's the way we're going to do it, then let's do it that way. You know, I don't think, you know, Cluj are going to get scalped off. You know, they're going to get Neil Poit in the Champions League, most likely. And they beat us. So we're better off not being there, you know, allowing for the 25 million quid, which, to be honest, I don't care about because we're not going to spend it anyway. So we're better off earning a place in the Europa League and going in it, and maybe we've been humbled. Maybe we'll look these other teams in the eyes and show them a bit of respect and, you know, have some entertaining matches.
Yeah, but I suppose that the counter to that is, you know, your point about we may not spend it anyway, that's the whole point. Our revenue last year was 100 million quid, second highest, you know, in the top three, certainly, of clubs in European football outside the big five leagues. Our wage bill was in the top three of clubs in European football outside the big five leagues. Even if we don't spend it, we still are spending at the elite level of spend in European football, but delivering Cluj standard, whose revenues, you know, Aberdeen level.
It'd be interesting to see who the highest wages were last year. I mean, you've got to say Brown's probably got to be up there.
Yeah.
Probably wager a certain Swedish fullback, you know, with all his international caps and his 10 years served, he was probably quite a decent wage. Sinclair will be a high wage. So I think we're wasting money internally, you know, relative to who are the key contributors. I'm sure Tierney and McGregor and Forrest had all crept up into the higher bracket, but at least they are and they were, you know, staples in the team that always delivered.
Yeah.
You know, I doubt Christie's on that much, but Christie's now our best player. Rogic, there's another one. Rogic will be getting crazy money relative to our situation, and he's a non-contributor and has been for a long, long time. So, yeah, we really need to sort ourselves out. You know, if your primary earners need to be your best players. Surely.
Is it just me that's a bit suspicious that there's just no chat about whether Rogic is or isn't fit? He's just not available. I find, I'm not quite sure what's wrong with Rogic. I mean, I do sometimes think Celtic are poor at communicating why a player's out and how long he's going to be out. But I've just heard no chat about Rogic at all.
I mean, with him, it's just become the default saying, hasn't it? So you stop asking the question. I mean, even, you know, even if he turned up, you know, this season fully fit, I still think it was time to pass on the baton to Christie and make him our main man. But it looks like he's just going to fizzle out. Who knows? Maybe he'll come back and score a lot of goals. I wouldn't bet on it at this point.
Well, the English window's gone, so he's not going to England if he's going to, you know, if he's going anywhere. It's going to be either continental Europe or he's staying at Celtic. And if he's staying at Celtic and he, you know, I don't know if he does or he doesn't, but I suspect he does. If he's staying at Celtic and he fancies a move, he really needs to get his finger out, because last season was a bit of a nothing season.
Yeah. So yeah, he wouldn't be a success in the English Premier League.
He's too
slow. I mean, he's too slow. He's too ambling. He's too give me my time. I mean, it's a very entertaining league, but you know, between that and the Championship, it's just a, you know, it's a cross between a boxing match and a, you know, marathon. You know, it's not beautiful football. It's very entertaining, but it's not where a, you know, a poet like Tommy Rogic would shine, is it?
No. So that, you know, maybe his agents, maybe he's just not fit, and he's going to be ready, or maybe his agents secretly contacting teams in Portugal and Spain and trying to find a club for him. So. What was your general mood after the Cluj game?
It was weird. There was that, I mean, the highs of the Forest goal and the Christie goal were so incredible that, you know, the heart was pumping. And it did remind me of when me and my brother went up to the Tyrol-Innsbruck game. You know, just that you can't come down from that. You can't just tell your brain to come down from that. Even though, you know, rationally, all right, we then let in stupid goals and lost this game. And it was absolutely sickening. There was a great photograph of, what's the right back called from Israel? El Hamid?
Yeah, uh-huh.
There was a great photo of him looking absolutely distraught. I downloaded it, I'm going to keep it. And it was, you know, it was him looking absolutely distraught with all the Cluj players dancing in the background. And for me, it was just one of the great Celtic photographs. You know, as great as, you know, Tommy Burns celebrating in the Scottish Cup final in 95, you know, as Craig Gordon celebrating the, you know, the first treble, you know, for completely different reasons. But it was a great photograph, you know, of just capturing
Effie Ambrose standing in the middle of the box against Juventus when not looking like a footballer. That's one of my favourite pictures as well. When everybody else is pulling shirts and tugging, Effie Ambrose standing in the middle of the penalty box. But of course, so, you know, the reason I was asking that is the challenge of a manager after that game of trying to get your players up, trying to remind your players that the next game's a domestic game and you've scored 12 goals domestically in the two, it must be pretty difficult to lift the whole club after that game.
Yeah.
And so it didn't look like he did.
Yeah, it did not.
For the Dunfermline, now I know you had challenges getting to watch the Dunfermline game. For anybody who didn't see the Dunfermline game, if you just think of the Morton League Cup game under Neil Lennon 6-7 years ago, it was that, except we scored.
What I quite liked about the goal was, and I'm going to needlessly shit on a Rangers legend here, just because I can. Remember when Loudrup scored the poxy scoop from the wing against, I think it was Aberdeen for Rangers?
Mm-hmm.
It was basically a cross. He tried to cross it to the back post. I think it was Negri. And it went in. And he then celebrated as if he was like a genius. You know, this is like 20 years ago and it's still bothering me. But Mikey Johnson, you know, scores, which, you know, he could easily have spun away pretending he was Georgie Hadji, and that was a wonder goal. But his look to the ground, you know, he looked like a Smiths fan. You know, just shoegazing, just like, oh dear, that was a shit cross, and I know it, and everyone knows it. It just happened to fly in at the top corner and look beautiful. I like the fact that Mikey Johnson did that. You know, he didn't do the loud rap of trying to spin it as genius when it was clearly an error.
The thing that was particularly amusing for me is Guy Ronnie, who sits next to me, was literally mid-rant about how he knows young players need to get game time and he's quite happy, but Mikey Johnson's not justifying getting to play every single game. I mean, what has he done? He's done nothing today. Bang. Go. I mean, it was literally one of those mid-rant, back of the net, because as you say, you weren't even thinking, oh, I'll shut up here because he's about to shoot. It was a cross.
Yeah. But at least he owned the cross. You know? And fair play, you know, if that's his mistakes, then, you know, let's stick with him. Like I say, his goal against St Johnstone a few weeks before was brilliant and, you know, propelled us towards a wonderful victory. So I'm all for him and the team, and I look forward to seeing him score as many flukes and wonder goals as he likes, you know?
So for me, there was three main talking points that came out of the Celtic Dunfermline game. One may not have come across on the television. The Dunfermline songbook, there was probably about 2,000, maybe even 2,500 Dunfermline fans at the game. And their songbook was straight out of Rangers 1984, like the whole game. From the very first whistle, when they were singing Pedo, Pedo, through to Jimmy Savile's song, and then there was other songs, I couldn't make out what they were singing, I could just hear the word Fenian every so often, and mixed in with Jimmy Savile and Pedo, and the whole game, their songbook was more vile than I've heard from a Rangers crowd. Honestly, it was awful. We were shit, and then Scottish referees don't know the ball to hand rule, right? That was the main talking points. Scottish football have managed to, some clickbait journalists in Scottish football, particularly Tom English, Neil Cameron, and Ewan Murray, have managed to turn that into the whole debate of the weekend was Tom Boyd and his comments on Celtic TV. What did you make of the Scottish media turning that into the big thing?
The funniest thing about it was, and we've mentioned it on here, you know, Tom Boyd's, you know, commentary on Celtic TV, for a journalist to get angry about it. I think I sent a message to some pals, and, you know, what's his next big scoop? You know, the Berlin Wall's no there anymore. What happened? You know, it's like, Tom Boyd's been doing this for years. So why are they getting pissy about it now? You know, this is so, even if it was news, which it isn't, because it's just a Celtic fan talking pish the way I am just now.
It's a Celtic fan talking pish on a Celtic subscription channel. For Celtic fans only to watch.
So he's doing that, and he's been doing it forever. You know, he didn't say anything beyond that he's been saying for years. So I don't know how Tom English got tipped off it on this occasion, why he took particular offence on this occasion, because it's absolutely nothing, isn't it?
The strange thing about it is Tom English's issue, one of his issues is that it allowed Celtic to deflect from the dreadful performance. Well, the only reason it's allowed Celtic to deflect from the dreadful performance because that's all him and a couple of others have talked about for the last 3 days. If he wants, you know, he's the one that's deflected from the Celtic performance of dreadfulness.
Yeah, he's the only guy putting it to print. Who else was? Yeah, so he's, I'm not a fan of him.
No.
That's me being diplomatic.
I've had a bit of, dialogue with him. He's been on the podcast, right? And there's been, do you know what I think? He's a bandwagon jumper. And see, because he likes golf and rugby and also football. So he likes two middle class games and a working class game. He's portrayed as this intellectual.
Yeah.
By Radio Scotland. And he used to write for a broadsheet. So he's portrayed as he's the intellectual columnist within our division. That's the sort of role he's got. But actually, he knows nothing. He jumps on the bandwagon, and this is now the fourth occasion when he's jumped on the bandwagon, and I've tried to engage privately with him, saying, do you know what, actually, here's some stuff. Because he said to me in the private engagement that anybody who said a Scottish referee was biased was an imbecile. To which I then went back and said, actually, there's been quite a bit of research done about unconscious biases that people have. The major, the Basketball League in America, the NBA, they did 15 years of research.
Yeah, did you listen to the Michael Lewis podcast?
Yeah, listen to the Michael Lewis podcast. So I sent him a link to the Michael Lewis podcast. And I then also found the University of California research into it. And his reply was load of shite.
What a dick.
So the guy who's portrayed by BBC Scotland as the intellectual guy, when you then say to him, look, don't want to fall out about this, here's some research that will demonstrate that actually, okay, we can go over the top about whether, actually Tom Boyd said, the referee's biased. Is it premeditated? I don't know. Or something along those lines. And I said, look, getting away from the hyperbole, the very fact is, there is an issue that the Scottish FA draw the referees from the same demographic, white, educated, working class males from Lanarkshire, who are all going to have the same type of unconscious biases. So here's some research about it. So would it not be a good story to write about the challenge of having impartial referees? And, I don't know anything about research. Well, here's a podcast you can listen to, and here's some research you can read. Load of shite. We've had enough of experts.
I'd recommend anyone listening to this who does, by default setting, download the BBC Scotland football podcast, not to download that and listen to the Michael Lewis podcast.
Absolutely.
Bloody good.
They are. So we're through. Again, as Ronnie next to me was pointing out, the first time we've not won a cup game in
regulation time.
In 4 years.
That is scary, isn't it, though? That is a little bit frightening that, first run out, we're already making it look harder than we've made it look for, 3 years.
Yeah. So, but we're through. That's all that matters. So, big game tomorrow night as we record this against AIK Stockholm. So, what's your thoughts about going into that game?
It's always the assumption you kind of look at a country. It's not a great Swedish vintage right now as a national team. So how good can their champions be? They shouldn't be better than us. If their budget's smaller than us, they should not be better than us. So, against everyone outside the big four European leagues, I'm always confident that Celtic can do well. Although, recent history suggests that is naive. So are we home or away, actually? I don't even
know. We're home tomorrow night.
Right, so I'm going to go positive. Christ knows who will play at the back. Assume the best that Edward, Forrest, Christie and Johnson or McGregor or whoever will blast us on to a confident home win. and put us in a position where we can go away and then have another comical, farcical, tragic away performance that either we scrape through or, you know, usual routine. Surely we're going to go through. It's only the Europa League. If we, at the end of the day, if we can't get through it, we don't deserve to be there.
Well, we have drawn 1-2 and drawn 1 out of our European games away from home so far this season.
So we've actually turned that ship around. We're actually better away from home.
Well, the score lines suggest we will see. What was your team? You know, I was going to get back to the Dunfermline game, and you know, I've read a few people going on about, oh, you know, is it this, is it that reason? Do you know, mate, you're talking about the '80s earlier and your dad's melancholy over Charlie Nicholas. Do you know, one of my most vivid memories of growing up through the '80s is Celtic getting knocked out in Europe round about middle of October, then going the whole of November losing to everybody. Invariably we'd have a game, you know, it's a time that they were decent teams, so invariably we would have be something like away to Aberdeen, at home to Dundee United, and playing somebody else and then Rangers, and we would lose at Pittodrie, lose to Dundee United, draw with Rangers and beat the other team, because it was such a downer losing in Europe. And I did think that was an element of the Dunfermline game, was the whole club would have been on such a downer after losing to Cluj, and particularly, as you said earlier, the manner that losing to Cluj. So what would your team be for the home game against AIK?
Assuming everyone's fit, I wouldn't give up on Bain until we've bought a better goalkeeper.
Well, he's still out injured, I think, so it will be Gordon.
Right, okay. Then I was saying to someone the other day, he was asking me about Celtic, you know, I have some English mate of mine or something, and I was saying that, you know, apparently we've got this, you know, vaunted young goalkeeper who's really tall and good, and although he was shite in the pre-season friendly that I saw him, I'd shift away from playing the 38-year-old. I'd rather go for the 18 or the 20-year-old, just as a progressive measure. You know, if Hazard's ever going to be a Celtic goalkeeper, maybe throwing him in a la David Marshall is the way to do it. And I am aware that I've just pronounced it Hazard, as if he's a Belgian. Sorry, Hazard. So yeah, if he's the next young goalkeeper, I'd go with him. I'm sure most people are shouting at their MP3 players saying, you know, you have to play Gordon. All right, fair dues. I'd go Bolly. I'd go Julian. I'd go Ayer and El Hamid, if they're all fit. I'd go McGregor and Cham Christie. I'd go Forrest, Edward, Mikey Johnson. And I'd make Callum McGregor the captain.
No Scott Brown.
No need.
He didn't play against Dunfermline.
He didn't play against Leipzig, was it? Was it Leipzig?
I think it was.
Best game. Best European performance last year.
Yeah.
Biggest clutch game where we went out and beat a good German team. Wasn't it there then?
Yeah. And what's the score going to be?
If you play the team that I chose, obviously we're comfortable 3-0 win. But God knows. I don't know. Just hope. Ideally a win by 2. I guess you'd rather 2-0 than 3-1.
Yeah,
is the away goal. But in all honesty, I don't know anything about Stockholm, so not really sure.
It's all of just not knowing about them and big European teams. One thing that passed out was lots of people by for understandable reasons. I got a text half an hour into the, 20 minutes into the Cluj game. Porto were 3-0 down after 16 minutes to Krasnodar at home.
Yeah.
Porto went out at the same stage as us. They lost 3-2. They'd won 1-0 away, but they lost 3-2 at home and went out on away goals. So we're not the only team who fucks up.
Yeah, their economic model must be completely flawed.
So we're going to get through the tie. We're going to win by 2 to 3 clear goals, according to you. So are we going to get through the tie? Are we going to be in the group stage draw for the Europa League?
Yes. And if we don't deserve to be there. I think we will. And we'll probably draw Slovan Bratislava. I've got a feeling. You know, it's just a matter of time before the Celts come to my doorstep. So, yeah, there's my prediction.
All right, so we've not just got a prediction for the result of tomorrow night's game.
Picking the group.
You've got the group made.
Yeah.
And with that, I'll say Anthony Murray, thanks very much.
All right, cheers. Hail.
I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I'm sure Anthony's going to be right, and we will get the goals against AIK, get the words out, Stockholm tomorrow evening, and we will go on to get through to the group stages of the Europa League. I would like us to be playing Champions League football, but I do always find funny the people who can find the time and money for Champions League football, but not that first for Europa League, when, you know, to some extent that may be our level. Anyway, enough of me. Hope you enjoyed the podcast and the song to follow. That's for some of our excited press colleagues. You are somebody that I don't know, but you're taking shots at me like it's Patron, and I'm just like, damn. It's 7 a.m. Say it in the street, that's a knockout. But you say it in a tweet, that's a cop-out. And I'm just like, hey, are you okay? And I ain't trying to mess with your self-expression, but I've learned a lesson that stressing and obsessing about somebody else is no fun. And snakes and stones never broke my bum, so you're coming at my friends like a missile. Why are you mad when you could be glad? Sunshine on the street at the parade, but you would rather be in the dark age. Just making that sign must have taken all night. You just need to take several seats and then try to restore the peace and control your urges to scream about all the people you hate. Cause shade never made anybody less gay, so on the internet, comparing all the girls who are killing it, but we figured you out.